Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you today? I'm doing fine, you know. I'm doing all right. It seems the world around me is crumbling a tiny bit, at least where I am in BC. We've entered another round of COVID restrictions because there are variants flying about and folks are, you know, hanging out in restaurants. Even though they're well spaced out, it appears that, you know, the young folk who are like under 50, but I'm not that old that I consider that the young folk, but the young folk are spreading this virus willy-nilly, or at least twice as frequently as has been in the past. So they've implemented another 3 weeks of stricter restrictions here, trying to bring the numbers down. But it's not a full lockdown. I get to do everything I was already doing. I get to go shopping if I'm wearing a mask, and I get to go out in the park and that kind of stuff. I was never going to restaurants anyways, other than to do takeout. So it doesn't affect me at all, but my goodness, this is lingering. I want to go home to Saskatchewan so bad, and it's like you just can't travel up here. Or you shouldn't. People do. But maybe that's the thing. Maybe I should just, you know, no. I'm not even going to say it out loud because I figure, you know, we're all in this together. We got to figure this out together. And so me going to Saskatchewan to visit my 83-year-old dad who hasn't been vaccinated yet is probably not a smart thing to do. I'm going to wait a little bit longer. I'm going to wait till August. And then we'll reevaluate the situation. So today on the show, I have a really fun talk with Brant Stewart, who is a baker. He's a bakery owner. He's a community worker. He runs a nonprofit foundation. And he's American, but he lives in Beirut. And he runs a really cool operation out there and has got a bunch of stuff on the go. So I connected up with him and we had a really good talk about all of the stuff that he's involved in and why it's important to him and how it's going. Even with all the stuff that's going on in Lebanon and specifically in Beirut in the last year or so. So before we do that, I just want to mention that I'm kind of excited today. I really am, because this afternoon, so I'm recording this little chat, this intro, on Tuesday morning. And this afternoon, we're having a baker roundtable call for Bakers for Bakers. And I'm excited about this. It's the first one we've had this year. It's a gathering of folks to talk about scaling up, kind of production planning, kind of deciding when to grow and then how to grow and how to afford to grow. And if you want to make a little bit more product, how do you fit that into your day? That kind of stuff, you know? And so it's a challenge that everybody has really kind of no matter what level of operation you're running right now, it's a challenge. You could be open one day a week and you want to open 2 days a week, or you are open and you want to introduce a new line of pastries and it seems like you're working every second to make the existing stuff get on into the display case. How are you going to add another product line? That kind of stuff. That's what I mean by scaling up. Not necessarily, you know, opening your seventh location. I figure by that point you've got it figured out. But for those of us who haven't got it figured out, we're going to get around the Zoom table and talk about it. And so I'm excited about that. You know, one of the things that we're doing with Bakers for Bakers this year that I really want to get going is these roundtable calls where we've got a specific topic to talk about. And what we do is whatever's a hot topic in the forums, it's like, hey, let's have a call about this, because you can only write about it so far. Sometimes you got to jump on the phone, jump on the video camera and talk it out. And so that's what we're trying today. And if it goes well, we're going to do a lot more of these. So long way of saying, if you are a baker or a bakery owner and you want to get involved in this, sign up. to bakers4bakers.org. That's bakers4bakers.org. It's free to sign up. You can join, you know, a couple hundred bakers from around the world here, bakery owners of all shapes and sizes, getting together to ask questions, share knowledge, share ideas, vent a little, depending on the day. And it's a lot of fun. So bakers4bakers.org. Don't be shy. Come join us. It'll be fun. Brant Stewart. Brant is the founder of the Saddle Sewed Foundation, which is based in the States but is raising money to help in different projects in Lebanon around and beside and aligned with the Syrian refugees who are coming to Lebanon, but also, you know, helping them kind of integrate within the community and be part of this melting pot that is Lebanon. It's a fascinating place, the more I learn about it. He's also the owner of Mawia Bakery, which he started to help folks get employment, help women primarily get employment in Beirut through baking. And he's got a bunch of other projects on the go, and we talk about all of that stuff. So I'm excited to bring this call and share it with you. I was excited to have the conversation. Let's get started. Brant Stewart, Mawia Bakery in Beirut, Lebanon. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Right on. Yeah. Nice to meet you, Brant.
Yeah, you too. I guess, this is kind of random for me, but a really nice surprise.
Well, I was talking to Meg Roberts up in, and do you know Meg?
I don't. I know who she is, yes. So I've never met her.
Gotcha.
But I think I don't know how she found out about us, but she has been raising money for us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's donated a couple times to us. So I actually was just texting her on Instagram and told her I was going to be speaking with you.
That's awesome. So, yeah. Well, yeah. It's weird because, I talked with her a few weeks back and through the same kind of thread that got me connected up with Meg a few months ago, she was like, you know, you really need to talk to Brant. He's got an interesting story to tell. And so, so there we go. So, and then I started, you know, saying, okay, well, let's find out what's going on here. And it's like, yeah, I think you've got more than one story to tell. It's been a wild time for you.
Right? It's been, I guess, non-conventional.
yeah, I'd say. So are you in Beirut now?
Yeah. I was in the States for about 6 weeks
The
holidays and stuff. I hadn't been back for a while. So I just came back about last weekend. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so where was your first home for you? Like, where are you from?
So I grew up in Las Vegas, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Born in California, lived in Mexico for a brief time. And then my father's Mexican. And then grew up in Vegas basically my whole life.
Wow. So what did your parents do that you ended up in Vegas?
That's where both of my parents were from.
Really?
My mother.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just happened to, grew up there. So
I shouldn't sound so surprised. It's a very big city when
it comes down to it.
You know, like there's like almost a million people there now, isn't it?
You would know better than me, maybe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I don't know.
Yeah. But I'm in Canada, right? I don't know too much about, I was in Vegas once in my life for like a conference when I worked a corporate job and I went down to Vegas in May. So it was like a zillion degrees. And, I noticed that it was a much, much larger city than I was expecting. You know, like,
yeah. And I remember growing up when I was in high school, it was one of the fastest growing cities in the nation. Kind of for quite a while. So,
wow. Cool.
Yeah.
And so then what is your connection then, I guess, to Lebanon and the area of the world where you are now?
I really have zero connection.
Okay.
Random. It's a long story, which I guess I can tell you now. So I started coming here to Lebanon about 8 years ago. I, at the time, was living in LA and was working as a photographer part-time and kind of trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I decided I had 2 months where I didn't have any work and I had money saved up. So I decided I wanted to go somewhere and to shoot a story about something that was interesting and meaningful and kind of give me a sense of purpose. And Lebanon was pretty random. I had been here the year before. So in 2012, I had come for a quick visit. I was kind of like doing a tour in the Middle East and I just loved it. It's a beautiful country. The people were really friendly, but I had no real connection to it. Other than the fact that I had been here once and I liked it. So I decided to come to Lebanon and spent 2 months here. And I was trying to photograph Syrians since the war in Syria had started about a year and a half before this.
Right.
And so I started volunteering for a nonprofit and started meeting refugees doing that. And yeah, I don't know. When I first came, I wasn't planning to continue coming back wherever I was going to go to, but it just kind of it sucked me in. So I'm still here. I haven't been living here though the whole time. I was coming back and forth between the States and here for quite a while.
Gotcha.
It's my new home, oddly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it started as, okay, you're a photographer and we've got to document kind of what's going on, right? And, you know, with refugees and stuff, was that sort of the...
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to tell stories. I wanted to tell stories about Syrians and what they were going through. And as I spent time here and spoke to Syrians and started to realize that what I had read in the news was not really what was happening, or there was a lot more nuance to what was happening. And so I became very invested emotionally, I guess, in what was happening with Syrians. And so, I kept coming back. I worked on the documentary on and off for like a good 2 years, and sadly, I never finished it though.
Okay.
But I realize in hindsight that the documentary really, it was my education in terms of really kind of forcing me to spend time with a lot of Syrians, to hear their stories, to meet them, go into their homes, and to like, and that's how I started to really understand what was happening. And it really gave me the desire to like try and help more. So I think I'm happy with the fact that it served its purpose in terms of educating me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've got a friend, he lives in Sacramento now, but I believe it's his dad or maybe his whole family is originally from Syria. Sort of, he's from Jersey, right? But like, so second generation, you know, born in the States and that. And we were talking one time and he was telling me about when he went back to visit his uncles and aunts and stuff as a boy back in Damascus and that, and just it brought depth and breadth and color to this place that for me anyways, like you only see on the news, and it's the news these days is like, it's more like sports. It's like, you know, who's winning, what's the score, it's easy to forget that there are people, living, breathing people, families, it's life. It's just life. People trying to live their lives, you know, and
exactly.
That's like, what I've got so many questions about that because, you know, with everything, Beirut's been going through.
Yeah.
So then how did you link up with this foundation or is this like your foundation that you started?
Yeah, I started it. About maybe, gosh, I should know this. Maybe 2 years after I first came, I started the foundation. And it just came from a place of, well, looking back on it, I think the documentary, it was really, I wanted to do something. I wanted to help. I wanted to, you know, help bring awareness. But then I think I just wanted to really help and however that it would be. And so the foundation kind of took form when I realized that I have a background in education. I used to be a teacher and I just saw a lot of opportunity to be able to use some things that I had learned in training to teach people to apply that to the situation here. And so it basically just started like a little project that like, hey, I'm going to ask friends and family for donation money. I'm going to try and see if I can do something. Initially, it was focused only on Syrians. So we started providing educational support to Syrian kids, which at that time it started as we were just paying for their buses to get to school.
Right. Okay.
So like the UN started paying for a lot of their education, but transportation was really prohibiting students from accessing education. So I started the foundation. It stayed really small since I started it. So So the bakery that I run now is under the umbrella of the nonprofit.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it Mavria or Mavia?
So it's spelled Mavia, but it's pronounced Mawia.
Yeah. Mawia. Thank you.
Confusing. Yeah.
No, that's okay. It's all good. Thank you.
Everyone here says Mavia too, because that's how it's written.
Okay.
But there was a queen in Syria in the 5th century who was this warrior Arab queen who led battles or armies into battle and defeated the Romans. And her name was Mawia. And it was spelled with a V in English. So I decided to spell it with a V.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. And so so the purpose of the bakery then is what? I guess like how does the bakery serve the mission?
Yeah, so it's kind of long and complicated. Let me see. So I mean really the bakery kind of it came about because I just love bread. I mean really.
Yeah.
And actually it has a connection to you, to where you're from, I guess.
Okay.
Where you live. I think if I am remembering right, you're from Saskatchewan, but you live in Victoria.
That's true. Okay. Yep.
So I came to bread through water buffalo, which sounds weird, but I become obsessed with this Turkish dish called kaymak, and it's made from water buffalo milk. And I don't know how many years ago, but I became super obsessed with water buffalo. I started visiting buffalo farms. I had this dream to open, to start my own buffalo farm in the U.S. I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time. And one of the first farms I visited was in Victoria, or on Vancouver Island. It was in Duncan, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It was called Fairburn Farm. It was basically like a Airbnb or bed and breakfast thing. You could go and stay on the farm. Right. But I just wanted to go and see buffalo. So, and the reason that why I had connection to Saskatchewan is that the son who ran the farm, he ended up moving the farm to Saskatchewan. So that's where he's
at. Oh, really? Oh, how cool.
Yeah. And he moved the whole buffalo herd there. So,
wow. I'll have to check that out. That's that's neat. Yeah.
But so basically this whole grand scheme was I was going to start the creamery first. I was going to bring water buffalo milk down from Vancouver Island to Portland, make cheese and sell it.
Okay.
I did like a brief stage in Italy learning to make mozzarella. So that's what I was going to make was mozzarella
and
fresh cheeses. So when I was in Portland, I was making all this cheese and butter and things. And I ended up meeting this girl who was a baker. Her name is Adrienne Hale. Her Instagram is 1000 Bites of Bread. I don't know if you know her.
Okay. No, I don't.
She's an awesome baker and whole grain enthusiast, and she lives in Portland, Oregon.
Right on.
So I met Adrienne randomly. I met her randomly and we started trading. So she was giving me bread and I was giving her cheese and butter.
Nice.
And I think that was really the first time I tried really good bread was Adrienne's bread. And it just kind of blew my mind. And I was getting ready to come back to Lebanon for a trip. And I was like, hey, Adrienne, can you teach me how to bake sourdough bread? And I had baked before. Like I grew up kind of baking with my mom and grandmother, but never sourdough. So she gave me a lesson and she gave me my first lesson. I became completely obsessed. And so kind of around the same time, actually, are you familiar with Sarah Owens?
I am. Book, yeah.
Sourdough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple other books.
Well, I haven't talked with her, but she's one of those hubs.
Yes.
Many, many people point to Sarah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sarah and I had been following each other on Instagram completely randomly. I mean, had nothing to do with bread. I think this was before she maybe even started baking.
Wow.
I used to post a lot of nature kind of photos, and she used to work with roses, and you know, so she we ended up connecting via Instagram. I reached out to her actually when I started seeing bread pop up and that she was writing this book, and then the book came out and it won a James Beard Award. And so I ended up stopping through New York and I met her on my way back to Lebanon one trip. And I had started baking by this point, so I was super excited about it. And we just, we had a really lovely chat. I went to her house. It was near the airport. And so I got back to Lebanon and I was just, all I could think of was bread. And I was running a school at the time here, and I don't know, you know, being here and hearing people's stories and working with people who have been through a lot, it's draining in a lot of ways. It's very draining emotionally. And I felt like I was kind of losing steam. And I think the baking really was something that I just really grabbed onto that gave me energy. And so Sarah, I got back to Lebanon. I was obsessed. I was baking. And then I reached out to Sarah and was like, hey, I've just been thinking I should just start a bakery here. Like, people are asking to buy my bread because, you know, I couldn't really find good bread at that time. At least bread I wanted to eat.
Sure.
And so Sarah ended up coming here for a month. This was in January 2017.
Oh, wow.
And so she spent a month here with me. We started the bakery up in Tripoli in the north of Lebanon, where the school was located. And I don't know, all along, getting back to your question, sorry.
This is awesome. Yeah.
I viewed the bakery as, one, something that gave me energy and like was motivating me and something I loved. Mm-hmm. I also saw it as an opportunity to be able to employ women. Employing women was something I had been thinking about and wanted to do. In later years, most of our education programs were geared solely to women and girls, actually more girls than women. So I wanted to kind of, I've been thinking to start a business somehow to employ women. So that kind of checked the box. And then I just saw it as an opportunity also to be creative, but then also to bring in money that we could use to fund the school.
Right on. Yeah.
We were running a literacy class for a couple of years. And so, yeah, that was kind of the inspiration behind the bakery initially.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got sort of a double-edged social enterprise, right? Like you're employing women, you're providing the jobs and the income and stuff for them. Cause like I saw the video that you had made and just hearing the bakers talk about what they're able to do because they've got this job baking and that kind of thing. And then, the ability to, you know, raise money for the school as well. That's really cool.
Yeah. It just kind of, it fit really nicely. And for some reason, I just really took to bread and to wheat in a way that I hadn't to cheese.
Okay.
I mean, like I love cheese.
But yeah.
I don't know. Wheat was so much more, I don't know what the word is, so much more fascinating to me. And actually, I remember Adrienne, when she gave me my lesson, she was like, I'm so excited for you to get back to Lebanon and to start seeing what ancient grains you have there, because that's where wheat comes from, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And this, I think that was the idea that really like grabbed me. I don't know why, but like, I just really got excited to start really investigating and seeing what was around. And I got back to Lebanon and realized that there was not much around, sadly, that not many people used local wheat. It's mostly all commodity, you know, imported commodity wheat that's roller milled into white flour.
Right.
And that's what's used to make the local bread. So that really interested me and made me even more to want to start baking and stuff here.
Yeah. Right on. Well, and so how has that little excursion gone? Are you able to find some whole grains to work with and that kind of thing?
So yeah, we've made some progress in the past years. It started with literally, I just started driving like to the areas I knew where wheat was grown. And I just started like looking for shops selling wheat. And they all kind of look the same. They have big white bags, you know, outside. And So, and then I started meeting some farmers as well, people growing some old wheats. It's a bit challenging here. I speak Arabic now a bit, like I can get by okay, but it's not great. Yeah. But for years it was like, I couldn't access anything because I didn't speak the language.
Right.
And, in Beirut, like everyone speaks English, so it's really easy to get around in Beirut. Mm-hmm. But then, if I was going out to these areas where they're growing wheat, no one speaks English.
Right.
Or very few people.
Right.
So yeah, I just started gradually meeting farmers, I met a wheat dealer who, like, you know, he buys up wheat from local farmers and sells it. And it's gotten to the point now where I've had land donated to us, to the bakery, and we're now growing our own wheat. So yeah.
Wow.
Kind of made an evolution.
Oh, that's so cool to hear. Oh, really, really.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So now I planted out in November. I have a few fields where we got a couple of grants to do some, food security programs, and I can tell you more about that later, but
yeah.
Part of this is we're working with a local nonprofit. They're actually French, a group of French people that started like a farm here. And they teach farmers in sustainable agriculture practices. So they're actually growing about 5 hectares of wheat for us, which is like 50,000 square meters. And then I had some land donated to us from another actually customer who started coming to the bakery.
Wow.
I become obsessed with seeds, and I ended up, I've been collecting seeds for the past few years. And anyone who will listen, I'll start talking to them about it. And so I took out my little seed bank from the freezer and was like, these are all the seeds I have. I had tried growing wheat a couple of years ago and it was kind of a disaster. So he got really excited, this guy, Tony, and he's Lebanese. So I planted out a biodiversity field on the land that he bought that I'm using okay. now.
Wow.
So I've got about 40 different local varieties of wheat in now this season. And it's very small quantities. I got a lot of it from seed bank.
Sure.
And then I have some farmer friends, farmer/baker friends in Turkey. So I'm growing some Turkish varieties of wheat as well. So.
Wow.
Oh, that's yeah. So I'm excited cool. for the harvest this year.
Yeah. It's so neat that you've got the, just hearing about sort of growing out the connections, and I know a guy, cause that's like, you know, that's how anything gets done, right? You have to get out and get some friends to work with you in that, because you can't do it all yourself. And so yeah. really
well,
cool
Lebanon
to hear
is
those,
the perfect
happening.
Place for that. Like I think that's part of the reason why I kept coming back here, was that people are so social here. It's life is so dynamic and it's so easy to make connections. It's totally different. People really value their social life here. I would say wow. even more than work typically.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like there's, you know, it's very social. So it makes it easy to also like get stuff done in a way, you know?
Yeah. 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 So yeah. neat. So neat. And yeah. so you opened, what was that, 2017?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so, and I know everything changes last year, but the first couple of years that you're open, how was that going?
It was running okay. Like we were, basically we had one primary wholesale account. We were selling bread to a really hipster, nice coffee shop here in Beirut. And, they were our main customers for 2 years, actually. We were baking the bread in Tripoli. It was really a disaster. We were renting space in the community center. They had built out actually to help new food enterprises to get started. So we were just paying like an hourly rent. But we had some really bad deck ovens and the space wasn't the cleanest. It was in a very impoverished neighborhood in Tripoli, which was kind of why the school was there, was because of that reason. But it was just very challenging to bake there and then transport the bread an hour, 15 minutes to Beirut.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But so for 2 years, we managed to keep that running. And so I was able to just employ two women and that was basically it. Which was great. I mean, it was kind of, you know, I had never baked professionally before.
Yeah.
It kind of let me get my feet under me and figure things out. And it was great training for my bakers as well. And, you know, I think you mentioned you saw the video of, was it the,
yeah.
the two bakers?
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
The young woman and the older woman that were baking for you. Yeah.
Exactly. So really that relationship is really demonstrates like what I'm trying to accomplish with the nonprofit overall. Like over the years, you know, I was doing education and I started to see that there was a lot of tension in the community between Syrians, between Lebanese, between Palestinians. You know, Lebanon is always talked about as this place, this melting pot where you have all these different religions and everyone lives peacefully together. I would argue that that's not quite the case. And it's more, you know, people learn to coexist in a way.
Right.
I would say mostly people kind of, their closest groups of friends are really kind of similar to them. Just like everyone in the world, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we all kind of like to surround ourselves with people who are similar in terms of religion, you know, education, socioeconomic level. Right. It's natural, I think, for us to seek out those who are like us. But I started to kind of really realize that like what I want to really have at the like underlying foundation of the nonprofit is community building, or I guess that's another word for peace building.
Sure.
And, you know, there are lots of programs in Lebanon, lots of nonprofits focused on peace building. But my approach all along, I thought that I would take the approach of, instead of, you know, getting people together who maybe have some tension, there are some issues, there's lots of historical conflict between Syria and Lebanon. Instead of getting people together and talking about peace building or peace and like, you know, trying to go about it that way, I decided to take the approach of bringing people in the same space, but bringing people in with a common goal. And for instance, in the bakery, that's baking, it's employment, you know?
Yep.
And in our school, for instance, the reason why I was in Tripoli was because we were in this neighborhood with Syrians and Lebanese, but then amongst the Lebanese population, there were Sunnis and Alawis, two different sects of Islam. So that was kind of, we intentionally pulled from all the different groups for the kids in terms of who the students were. But going back to the bakery, like Dunya and Obaida, my two initial bakers, their friendship is really, it demonstrates exactly what I'm trying to accomplish. And that's, you know, those two women formed such a beautiful friendship over the 2 years that they baked together. Obaida ended up getting married and moving to Syria, to Turkey, sadly. But, you know, they broke down these ridiculous walls that people construct, you know,
right,
by relying on stereotypes and what other people say about the other group of people. They became really close friends, and that was a really beautiful thing. And that's what I'm still trying to accomplish in terms of the bakery staff now.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Awesome. Well, and then did you eventually move from that space in Tripoli then? Because mm-hmm. I was Googling around and I was like, oh, okay. You're like sort of right downtown now, or right in the central, eh?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. And that was for a few different reasons. One was most of our customers were in Beirut. We're making kind of a niche product here. We're making, mm-hmm. you know, sourdough bread. It's not the normal bread that people consume. So most of our customers were in Beirut already. It was better for me as well. I realized for this bakery to work, I have to be fully in it. And I lived in Beirut all along. I was commuting to Tripoli a few times a week. And gotcha. it was wearing me down.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the reason, being a bit selfish. But then really, when it came down to it, I realized that part of this breaking down barriers and getting different types of people in one space, it really couldn't happen in Tripoli the way it can in Beirut, because I can't force people in Beirut to come to Tripoli.
Right.
You know, Tripoli is a very conservative city, generally speaking. A lot of people from Beirut, they think it's very dangerous, even though I never felt that per se. But people just typically, they don't spend a lot of time in Tripoli.
Sure.
But I realized I can kind of force people from Tripoli to come to Beirut because I'm employing them.
Right.
And that's giving them a reason to be in these spaces where very different people live, you know.
Yeah, it's easier to sort of mix things up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So yeah, that was why we decided to, and also, you know, sharing this co, you know, working space type thing, it was just challenging on many levels. And so I kind of started to realize we needed our own space, you know?
Yeah. Anyone that I've talked to that has done this, and I've talked to a couple of folks that have sort of got their start through the community center kind of thing, or a rented kitchen space or whatever, mm-hmm. man, that just seems so difficult. Just, cause I don't know, what we do takes a lot of space and a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff, right? And so if you're bringing it in, taking it out, or repacking it up at the end of the day, it's like, that's so hard, you know? So like you can do it and you can get your, great test bed, I guess. But yeah, I understand. It's like, okay. Have we done the test? Yeah. Okay. Let's go. Time to move.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when did you move into Beirut?
I signed the lease in the summer of 2019. So then we started building it out kind of that fall, and I did some fundraising to try and fund that. Ended up borrowing some money as well. And so that really started going like August, September, build out.
Yeah.
And then in October, the revolution here in Lebanon started, which I don't know if you've heard about it, but
just the tiniest, but yeah.
Oh, you talked to Khaled, actually. I remember.
I talked to Khaled, but Khaled didn't want to go there. we talked a little bit, but it was sort of like, he's just like, it's complicated. But since then I did some reading about sort of like 2019 as being the big year of protests and the government getting thrown out or changed out or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty intense. And so the bakery, literally the day after the protest started was when my water was supposed to be installed in the bakery. So it just really like set things back quite a lot because everything shut down. I mean, we had a school running in Tripoli still then. We actually got a grant to do a larger project with adolescent girls. So we had 60 girls in school, and I couldn't even, I mean, it was taking me 3 hours to drive to Tripoli because there were roadblocks everywhere. You know, you didn't know, you'd drive down the road and there would be dumpsters that had been lit on fire and were blocking the road. And it was a really, stressful time looking back now. It was really great in certain ways. Like I was down kind of protesting. I wasn't like full on, but like, you know, I was going down to kind of support people. And that kind of set me back with the bakery quite a bit. So I really didn't start baking until lockdown, which was like March, like February, March of 2020.
Right. Yeah. Dear. And then the explosion hits, and you were very close to where it blew up, right?
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
So yeah, basically, I mean, the bakery was picking up a bit. Like, I started baking alone at the beginning of the lockdown. I would just go in, like, I would get pre-orders, and I just go in and spend like 2 full days, you know, prepping and then baking off the second day. And then, so we were increasing sales each month. And then, the explosion on August 4th, my house was about a half kilometer from the port, and the bakery is also about a half kilometer. That was, starting with the revolution, the economy in Lebanon was just, it was pretty dismal. The local currency, it's dropped in value by like 85% since then,
right? Mm-hmm.
Which is just catastrophic for most people. And then COVID came and more businesses had closed. And then the explosion came, and, when it first happened, I thought it was over. I mean, I kind of just that night I was just like, you know what, I'm done. You know, I've been here now for almost 8 years. I just, this is just too much. I can't handle this. I thought that we had been bombed. So I was thinking this in terms of, I thought we were about to start a war, really.
Like, right. Sure. War. Yeah.
The bakery, it was spared actually a lot of, it wasn't hit as bad as a lot of the places in front of us. we're tucked back in this pedestrian kind of alleyway, and we're kind of like the last space in the back. And so, you know, the facade all buckled in, the glass and the steel doors all buckled. And then there was some structural damage. Like, we have a wood oven that cracked. Luckily it's still usable. It's fine on the inside. And then some of the walls cracked. We were worried because the building that's attached to the bakery in the back, it was falling down.
Right.
And so for like maybe 2 weeks, we were worried that it was going to collapse. We didn't know. Luckily it ended up that it wasn't, in danger of collapsing. So, it was pretty touch and go there for quite a while, but but pretty soon after, I mean, maybe the day after the explosion, a friend, she's like, why don't you raise some money? Like, why don't we try and raise some money, and get the bakery fixed? And I think I told her no at first. I was just like, I'm done. Like, I had taken out a loan for the bakery. And as I saw the country just going down the spiral economically, it was like, I think I was becoming more and more sucked into this like black hole of like, I'm never going to be able to get this money back, to pay this loan back. You know, I just, because of the economy, I just thought it was not going to work.
Right.
But she convinced me to start raising money, and it really kind of blew up. I mean, like, people started sharing it, and Sarah Owens obviously shared it. And, you know, over the years I've met a lot of people in the baking community, and it's such a supportive community. And so it just kept getting shared. And at some point Rihanna ended up, like the singer Rihanna ended up tweeting and posting something on Instagram. It was just, it was pretty crazy. And then all this donation money, it also led to us getting a couple of small grants. So, we rebuilt the bakery. We're up and running again. We kind of transitioned to a soup kitchen for a while, for about 2 months. And we were cooking food and giving it out to people in the neighborhoods. But we realized...
Because that's what you do when times are tough, right? It's like you're the guy that feeds people. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we did it until we felt like it just wasn't getting to the people who really needed it anymore.
Mm, okay.
Because so many organizations came in, so many people were cooking food. There was food being thrown out everywhere, and it just... it wasn't getting to the right people. A lot of the people who used to live in the neighborhood, they moved out of, you know, the neighborhood when the explosion happened. So they weren't even there anymore, you know? We ended up kind of transitioning back to normal bakery. But these grants ended up there. It's allowing us to start a food security program. That's kind of has a few different elements. One of it's helping to pay for some of this organic wheat that we're growing. We're going to be buying, I'm getting ready to order an Osti roller stone mill.
Oh, neat.
So we're going to have one of those soon as well. So we're going to set up a mill, out in the agricultural area, where most of the farmers are and stuff. And it'll be, I'm not sure exactly what the structure will be, but it'll be a sort of co-op. It will really allow, local farmers to be able to mill their own wheat into like a high quality flour. Right now that it's like, basically I think around 80% of Lebanon's wheat is imported. It's commodity wheat imported from countries like Ukraine. It's all like, you know, roller milled, like I said, into white flour. And then the local wheat that we grow here, it's, mostly all used to make frike. Are you familiar with frike?
Oh, I am. No, I'm going to say I'm not.
Green, they call it like green wheat. Basically, they harvest wheat when it's still young. So it's still in the hull. It's green in color still. And then they torch off the hulls to get the hull off.
Okay.
And so what's left is the wheat grain. But it has this toasted flavor because it's been like torched off, basically.
Yeah.
And then they just took it like a pilaf, for instance.
Put
meat and like toasted nuts with it. It's really, really tasty.
Gotcha.
So most of the wheat either goes to make that or to make bulgur wheat, which is just, you know, parboiled and cracked wheat. And very little of it ends up making it into flour.
Okay.
And so I started to realize that, like, a big, you know, when I started going out and asking farmers, like, hey, or I go out to a place that sold seed, I would ask them, like, hey, I want to buy local seed. Like, what's the better stuff, you know? And everyone would, like, across the board, like, hands down, they would always say, don't buy the local stuff. It's not good. Buy the Australian wheat, buy the Canadian wheat, buy the
right,
whatever.
Right.
Never the local. And I think part of the reason is that there aren't good mills here. Like, people are using, and there isn't a lot of milling knowledge.
Yeah.
Sadly. And so they're working with flour that's just not milled well. And so I think a lot of the local wheat gets discounted because it's not milled well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and if you lose the craft, really at any point in the chain, then you kind of rely on, I'm not going to say myth, but just sort of tradition, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, well, we don't do that any, if we ever did, we don't do that anymore. Just get the stuff from Ukraine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly, Lebanese people are very outward looking. Like, they like to, you know, embrace traditions from all over. And it's, right. I think, partly because there are Lebanese all throughout the world because of the war. You know, sure. There are a lot of, you know, migrants and Lebanese who, like, were spread all over the world. Yep. And so they're really willing to, like, take in everything from outside. And so that also, I think, means that a lot of tradition and a lot of local ways of, or in a traditional ways of doing things, have kind of been, they're just not used as much anymore, you know?
Well, and you mentioned food security as, you know, and that, even that as a topic is something that 18 months ago was, like, super fringe, right? You know, to be, like, hardcore into it, to know what that meant. And it's just, you know, with COVID around the world, it's like, oh, yep. It's coming up more and more and more and more. And it's like a mainstream thing. So yeah, it's, it would be fascinating to try. Cause at least if you mill it right, and if you can get some analysis on it and stuff, you can find out, okay, kind of what are we growing here? Cause, you know, yeah, like, grain's been grown there forever, right? Like, that's where it started. Yeah. I don't know that they were making big French boules then, but hey, it's like, you know, we'll figure it out, right? They're like, figure out what you have. And that's so cool.
Yeah.
So
the, going back to the food security project, so the mill will be part of it. And the final part will be kind of more short-term food security, which is, we're going to open another bakery out in that agricultural area in a refugee camp. Okay. And we're just going to bake strictly local bread.
Yeah.
So Maui all along, kind of, I always wanted it to be kind of niche, because I realized that, you know, there are a lot of, they called livelihood programming here in Lebanon. So basically you have nonprofits who come in, they realize they want to teach people how to earn a living for themselves instead of giving them handouts, which obviously right. makes sense. The problem is you have people who are not business people, and they're teaching business to people. Obviously they bring in, you know, consultants and things, but it's just done very poorly a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And the problem is too, they all teach the same skills. So it's typically like mune, which are like preserves, like pickles and jams and things like that. Or then there's lots of embroidery type stuff. But then I saw the market was flooded with all of the same products. And so all along I wanted it to be different. And so, that's why, you know, sourdough stood out, because it's,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
we could sell it for a premium, which would help bring in money for the school. And so now with the bakery in Bekaa, it's all about local stuff. So it's just going to be local bread, given away for free to people who are the most food insecure,
right.
which, are a lot of people now in Lebanon, sadly.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I was reading that even politically, like, they're still struggling to form a government and that kind of thing. There was a story I saw this morning that, you know, the prime minister who can't form a government is in France trying to drum up support and stuff. So it, like, it's just, you know, and it's funny, like, I read the news knowing that, okay, that's up here, and what are folks down on the ground actually doing? But it's like, it's got to be a bit of a reflection, right? Of, you know, times are still tough. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, obviously I haven't been in Lebanon for a super long time. Right. But in the 8 years that I've been spending time here, it's we're at a low. I mean,
yeah.
And a lot of people I've talked to, Lebanese people who lived through the civil war, they say that it's tougher now than it was during the war.
Wow.
Just economically.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
So it's cool to me, even with all of the changes and, you know, and the tragedy and stuff, it's that you've still got, you're still baking in different forms and some form, and you've still got the social enterprise component to it. So right up front and center, it's like, you know, we're doing this for this reason, and mm-hmm. good on you for sticking with it. When you were saying, you know, the days after the explosion, it's like, I can totally empathize with that and be like, you know, it wouldn't take that to make me want to quit. I'd have gone a lot way earlier, you know. And so like yeah. good on you for sticking with it and stuff. And I'm curious, like, so when I just to fill in a gap for me, it's like, are you still able to hire women and get them to come in and work at the bakery now, or is that sort of back?
Yeah. So, because of all this amazing support that we receive from people all over the world, including Meg, bakeries, restaurants, you know, random people, like, it's been so amazing. But because of all the support, we can basically run this bakery. We've managed to hire more women. So we have 6 women now working at the bakery. They're all kind of part-time, but we're, you know, baking again. And we should be able to stay running even without selling anything for at least 1.5 years. So, which will give us plenty of time. So, to kind of get our feet under us. But the reality is it's, you know, the neighborhood where the bakery's at, it's still really not what it was. I mean, it's definitely not what it was. A lot of people who lived there, moved away and didn't move back. You know, there's still a lot of destruction everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's going to take some time. And also the economy is just, you know, it's in shambles. COVID it's been a complete lockdown here for like over a month now of like,
oh, okay.
No one leaves their house. So it's been really intense and difficult, but it's been such an amazing thing, you know, having all the support from people around the world, knowing that like they're thinking about us, that, that they, you know, believe in what we do. It's just overwhelming. It's amazing. And it's giving us security, like knowing that we can pay the employees for the next 1.5 years is such an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
And we can pay rent. We can keep the lights on, you know, obviously we're trying to work towards being obviously, you know, profitable as a business.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So we can start taking that money and putting it elsewhere. But for now, you know, we're just kind of in nonprofit mode. We're going to start these, you know, the mill and the new bakery. And, we were just chatting. I think we're going to create a program for other small businesses, food businesses, because everyone's suffering now, where we will, create like a special product to them for them that we can sell to them for really cheaply, and they can mark up a ton to just like make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
So just start even maybe selling subsidized things to other restaurants that they can then sell and get more support. And we're trying to do this in a way where we're not taking away business from the other bakeries that are here, because there are some other sourdough bakeries. So, including the one that, Khaled used to bake at.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where we're at now.
So cool. Well, and I wanted to ask you earlier, just when you were talking about sort of the early days for you and, you know, starting this thing, and then I was able to get a grant, and then you've got different kind of aid groups coming in and stuff. That navigating all of that just has to be some of the most complex stuff okay, I'm a man from Nevada. I want to do some good. I'm going to do some good in a place where there are lots of other people trying to do it. And how do you kind of coordinate and do the most good you can? Right. And it sounds like that's almost your gift in a way, right? Is like you can, or your ability to kind of figure all that stuff out. is pretty amazing to me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know. I started to realize that for me, I'm not really interested in business just for business sake. You know, it's just, and it's been really amazing. It's been like an amazing investigation into blurring the line between a business and like a social enterprise, or being a social enterprise, really.
Yeah.
Because it's just people react differently to it, and you get support that you would never get as a business. For instance, and one of the visions I had all along too with this bakery is creating a space for other bakers such as Sarah Owens, who, you know, have so much knowledge and creativity and so much experience, and kind of doing exchanges in a way where they can come and bake with us. And at the same time, they get a really cool experience coming to a foreign country and like learning about this beautiful country that's Lebanon, and getting to meet, you know, refugees from Syria, and, you know, Dunya, who's a widow from Tripoli. You know, they just have such unique experiences. We also had another pastry chef from LA, Rose Wild is her name. She's amazing. She came out a couple of years ago and she baked with us and helped train the women. So this was also, you know, I get access to this as well when you have this like amazing, you know, when you have other things going on besides just the business, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's better for everyone, really.
Well, and even for, you know, trying to place myself in Sarah's shoes or in Rosa's shoes or whatever, is that you can see a country as a tourist, and you're never going to see it, but there's something about being in the bakery. Yeah. Just that hum, like, cause when I, even in North America, cause I've never done this overseas, but you go and help a friend out at their place and, you know, you're working all morning and you see the folks coming in and you feel that energy and that, and it's similar and it's different depending on where you go. Right. And I love the similarities. And then I love just how you can just sort of be part of this unique singular space as well. So yeah, it's that's really, really cool. I'm so, I don't know, I'm just so grateful to be able to hear this story, Brant. It's really, I'm really happy for you, and I'm really impressed. Yeah. Yes, I am impressed, but I would say inspired by just sort of the little offshoots and the other little projects, how it keeps building out for you. I love how you think like that and just kind of, yeah, well, let's do this and let's move a bakery out there because it'll help folks. And yeah.
Well, I couldn't do that for a long time, actually. And it's just been kind of in recent years that I managed to kind of, you know, for years, it was like, I believed in education. I saw the value in education. I thought I could make some kind of good tangible difference in that field. And so that was what I was working on. But that wasn't really like, I don't stay up at night thinking about education. I mean, other people do, and we need that.
Yeah, yeah.
Great, but that's not me. What I was obsessed with was the baking. And so the bakery, when we first started, was the first time I had managed to bring in more of me, like my own personal interests, into the space of the nonprofit. And I've just continued doing that. Like, so this has been, I mean, I would have never had these experiences if I had stayed in the US, of getting to now open a mill again, you know, having all this land to like use however I want to start this farm. And like, I've been given so much because, it's things that interested me, but it also aligns with a mission, and we're actually doing good by doing it. And I think that's just, it's me just kind of figuring out, okay, I like that. That's going to do some good for people. And then people respond in kind. You know, I think they see the good intention behind it, and then they help out.
Yeah. And the fact that it's really coming from your center as well, right? It's like you're able, because it's something that you're really passionate about, I always think you can refill the well faster, you know, because it's just sort of self-generating. Well, man, fantastic. So if folks want to help out and want to support what you're doing, which channel's kind of the way to do that now? Is it still the GoFundMe is sort of where I should be pointing them to?
Yeah, that's still up. It's still active. We have a PayPal account that it's just subtlesuitfoundation at gmail.com is the email address. Yeah, it'd be either Venmo or PayPal. So they're both easy options for people.
Yeah.
And just so maybe you and for whoever's listening knows kind of what I'm looking to do in the future with, if let's say we had more money, is I would like to start doing some nutrition education. So the idea, my idea all along when we started the bakery, that one of the first programs I wanted to start would be going up back up to Tripoli where we started. And there are a lot of girls and women who can't really access the outside world for various reasons. A lot of girls get married at very young ages. And after they're married, they drop out of school most of the time and they're kind of, you know, stuck at home. So the idea was to train like a core group of educators, really girls from the community in nutrition, and then they could go out to their own communities and reach those girls and women who are harder to reach.
Oh, right on.
So that's kind of one of the first programs I would like to do.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. I served on a board years ago back in Regina, called Home Economics for Living. And it was a very similar thing. Just realize, it was retired teachers realizing that, that young folks, especially young folks that were in trouble, didn't know how to cook, didn't know good nutrition, didn't know how to navigate a grocery store. And it's like, and so they had built a whole organization around this that was helping people do that. It's important work for sure. Thanks so much for this. I really appreciate the time and definitely want to get your info for all of the show notes and stuff, how people, if they to connect out and help out and stuff. Of course. Lovely. Thanks
can
so
I
much.
Just before we end, please. Can I just give a shout out to like all the bakeries, all the bakers that supported us?
Oh yeah.
You know, in the past while, like, thank you all. I'm sorry that, you know, I haven't done more to thank everyone, but just know that I and all my employees were so grateful for your support, and just the fact that you're thinking about us, it just means so much. So thank everyone. And yeah, thank you for the conversation.
Oh, you betcha. My pleasure. And thanks for taking the time. You know, awesome. Thank you. And
of course,
it's so funny when I first started the podcast, there's a bakery in New York called Hot Bread Kitchen. I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but their mission is another social enterprise. Their mission is to give employment to new immigrant women from all over the world that are settling in New York and trying to find their feet, and then baking the traditional breads from wherever they are from. Right. So,
awesome.
and they'd done a cookbook, and we had the cookbook, and it was like, oh, you know, the germ was there for the podcast. It's like, if I can talk to Hot Bread Kitchen, this would be worthwhile. Right. And I did, and I was able to talk to their head baker in one of the earlier episodes and stuff. And
awesome.
And, but it just builds, because you realize, okay, that's the famous one that's got a cookbook. And then, but if you heard about these guys and if you heard about what they're doing, and it's like, I honestly can't get enough of this. I learned so much, and I'm inspired so much by how everyone's doing it a little differently, but it's all coming from the same spot in their heart. And I love that. So, yeah.
So, and I think that's the most important part, is just everyone doing what they believe to be the most useful for everyone else, you know, and what really drives them.
Right on.
So I think it's a beautiful thing.
And that was Brant. What fun. It was a really cool chat. It was like everything we talked about. I was like, oh yeah, I've got a project. We're going to do this. We're going to start growing grain. We're going to start, you know, putting this little satellite thing out, and he keeps on going and he keeps on plugging away in the middle of wild times. You know, I was whining at the start about some COVID restrictions for the next 3 weeks where I live. This fella has been dealing with COVID, been dealing with a political revolution in the country, and dealing with an explosion that wiped out the bakery. I've seen a video on YouTube of this, and it's wild, the damage that was caused. And well, I'm going to rebuild, and we're going to keep on going. You don't stop, you just keep on going. And I really admire that. And so in the show notes to this episode, so like even on your phone, if you go to the description. If you go to riseuppod.com and check out his show page, you'll find information about the Saddle Seed Foundation. And if you want to contribute and be a part of what Brant's doing and help him out, you can. You know, your call, but that's how you find that stuff. We talked at the end of the call about, you know, how you connect up and that kind of thing. And I mentioned, put it in the show notes. Well, that's what that means. That means you look at the description on this podcast episode, and there will be links to like his Instagram page and his foundation page and that kind of stuff. Okay? Awesome. So you guys have been busy. You personally have been busy. I know it. It's a busy time of year for bakers, no matter where you live, no matter your culture, no matter the traditions where you live and the traditions of the people who you are baking for. It's a busy time of year, and I know you're going hard this week. So have a great week. Get over the finish line and then have a rest, okay? You know, take your rest when you can get it. And I'm grateful that maybe you're listening to this while you're in the middle of the mayhem of this busy week. That's pretty cool for me. And I wish I could, you know, get around the bench beside you and actually help you physically shape things as opposed to just raise your spirits. But hey, it's a podcast. So I'm in the spirit raising thing. So let's raise those spirits. Keep going hard. Stay healthy. Keep enjoying this, please. Bake lots. Until next week, happy baking. Bye-bye.